The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Gives me great pleasure to welcome to studio Francesca Albanese, who is the UN Special Rapporteur for the Occupied Palestinian Territories. Francesca, thanks a million for joining us here
Thank
on the show.
Thank you for having me.
I'm going to start with a couple of very basic questions, if you can bear with me. So a UN Special Rapporteur for the Occupied Palestinian Territories, what does that mean?
I'm a UN independent expert, meaning the United Nations has appointed me as to document and report on the human rights violations taking place in the Gaza Strip, the West Bank and East Jerusalem, the rest of Mandate Palestine that has been occupied since 1967 by Israel. And my main responsibility is to report and make recommendations to the Human Rights Council and the General Assembly. But of course, I also undertake investigations, and I should visit the occupied Palestinian territory, which Israel prevents. And I'm part of a network of UN independent experts. We are about 50, and most of them deal with human rights topics like freedom of expression, freedom of assembly, freedom from torture. And there are a few mandate holders who also deal with country issues. This is my case.
And how do you go about that investigating or that reporting in places like the West Bank or East Jerusalem or the Gaza Strip?
It's very difficult in one way because Israel prevents independent monitors, and including this mandate since 2008, from entering the occupied Palestinian territory. Of course, this is totally unlawful, but it wouldn't list as the first form of illegality, the first illegal act that Israel would undertake. So, and in 2008, this is when my predecessor, Professor Richard Falk, was arrested, detained and deported for doing his job, trying to enter the occupied Palestinian territory, which is worth reminding probably. I mean, I know that the Irish people are very well educated about the situation in the occupied Palestinian territory. But still, Israel has no sovereignty and it's an unlawful occupier as recognized by the International Court of Justice. So what do I do? The thing is that I've lived in the occupied Palestinian territory for 3 years, so I know the reality on the ground, I know the place, and I spent a lot of time for research after I left in between 2013 and 2022. This is when I went the last time. But also I receive a lot of testimonies. I collect testimonies, and as part of my investigations, primarily by victims, survivors, observers, witnesses, including United Nations. I verify, and sometimes Israeli soldiers and other Israeli informed persons. And then, of course, I verify the information with other, I triangulate information with the United Nations and others, forensic experts, legal experts.
And what happens that information after you compile it? Where does it go and what impact does that have?
It goes to the, as I said, to the Human Rights Council and the General Assembly. And normally it stays there. And I think that even stones in the United Nations and understands this history of Palestine as one of settler colonialism, apartheid, protracted occupation, prolonged occupation, and now genocide. And it's difficult, though, to see changes. So this is why when I became a special rapporteur, I had three ideas. The first was not to report on the cycle of violence, meaning during these 6 months, this is what has happened, but try rather to give some more information about structural issues, why the situation is so serious and continues to worsen. And this is why I've focused on the right of self-determination. And this is when I started in 2022. Everyone was talking about apartheid and member states were still pretending to talk about the two-state solutions. And I said, whatever, you cannot negotiate the illegal, and Israel cannot negotiate while, and Palestine cannot negotiate while under the yoke of occupation. Self-determination is not the outcome, must be the precondition for people to negotiate, because self-determination is the right to be free as a people. And so I've looked at mass incarceration strategies and policies, and the treatment of children. Look, and if I look back, this is my regret. I should have known that there were all the precursors of what has happened. This is what is happening now to the people in the West Bank. the Gaza Strip and East Jerusalem is a tragedy foretold. And it's just ignorance and misconceptions that has prevented many, including myself, as many Western people, to understand and give a name to what the Palestinians were enduring and were about to endure. The other thing is that I've decided to do is engaging with a public with a public at large beyond the United Nations as much as I could. So this is why I had the idea of visiting capitals, because in any case I'm prevented from going to the occupied Palestinian territory and then to engage with the media, which is pretty unusual. I mean, it's a new trend, but it has proven very impactful, because it, especially in the time that we have had after October 7, I've continued to say international law is like the yellow line in emergency in the middle of a haze, and allows us to get out of this madness with some wisdom and compassion. And no, it has not worked. But I have sort of given a legal reading of the facts as they were developing, and I contributed to shift the narrative.
Do you still have faith in international law and norms of international law being the way out of these types of conflicts, given what we've seen in terms of the escalation in Gaza, but also just from a broader geopolitical point of view, in this sense that we're maybe, you know, we're moving away from the liberal global world order that's dominated kind of post-war back to kind of a spheres of influence, whereby those big institutions like the UN might have less impact?
Well, the UN, you know, is made of states, and international law is as strong as states' will to enforce it, to implement it. It's not so. International law is a tool, and it shouldn't be seen as different from as a normative framework and something that needs to be enforced in order to be effective than domestic law. So, if you live in a country where the authorities constantly violate the law, or there is someone constantly violating the law and there are no consequences, you sooner or later you realize that it's lawlessness and abuses. And this is the thing at the international level as well. The multilateral system is made of political policymakers, political decisions, political fora. This is what the UN is about, the General Assembly, the Security Council. But where the will of states dominate. And so if the will of state is to approach what should frame their action, which is international law. International law establishes what is allowed and what is prohibited. Mm-hmm. And if the states operate outside or against what is permitted by international law, as international law was a pick-and-choose menu, we prepare ourselves for a world where might makes right. And we are already there. It doesn't mean... I mean, you ask me if I still have faith. It's not about faith. It's about discipline and sense of rigor, because I don't want to live in a world without rules. I want to live in a world with some certainty and a possibility to recognize each other as humans and as countries. Nation to nation recognition is fundamental, and it must happen on an equal ground, which is not the case.
When you talk about things then like mass incarceration, and you use the word genocide as well to describe what's happening in Gaza, and, you know, Ireland are part of that ICJ case as well, that's looking into all of this, that South African case. Do you suspect, or is it your understanding, that these are tactics, or is there a strategy?
It's not a tactic. I mean, if there is a theft, you call it a theft. If there is a fraud, you call it a fraud. In international level, you analyze the facts, you assess them against a legal framework. So perhaps, if you allow me, for the benefit of your audience, I would like to explain what constitutes genocide, because there is a lot of misunderstanding owing to perception, personal opinions. But in fact, what constitutes genocide is established at Article 2 of the Genocide Convention that member states of the international community signed in the aftermath of World War II and the Holocaust of the Jewish people, Roma and Sinti, disabled people, and many, many others who didn't comply with the idea of the pure race and during Nazi fascism. And so what constitutes genocide is a series of even one of these acts, as of killing, infliction of severe bodily or mental harm, creation of conditions calculated to lead to the destruction of a group, or measures leading to the prevention of birth or forced transfer of children. These are criminal acts in and of themselves, but constitute genocide when these acts are part of a design, of a determination to destroy a group as such. So I understand, I mean, this was my case as well. It's been my journey. I've never thought that I would use the term genocide with in connection with the Palestinians. And now I regret, because first of all, genocide is not an act. It's a process, and starts, there are precursors, like you see in other genocides, that segregation, mass arrest and detention, brutalization of the other are precursor of genocide. And the thing is that you identify genocide, not just that there is this hyper focus on intent. Of course, there should be intent, but intent is not the reason why one commits genocide. Is the moment the determination has been made to destroy the other. This is the element of genocide, the material element, the destruction. And it's intended like physical and biological destruction. And after 50,000 people killed amid full destruction that has been invoked, Israel has said that it would unleash hell, it would open the gates of hell against the Palestinians in Gaza. No one is innocent, not even the children. It has invoked the Amalek, which is a biblical message referring to the full destruction, including of mothers, the suckling, meaning the children, and the animals serving the family. And this is why Israel has wreaked havoc on Gaza. And it doesn't stop. It continues. It has nothing to do with liberating the hostages. It has nothing to do with fighting Hamas. Because the real game, the real end game of this is the ethnic cleansing of Palestine. And by the way, it's not happening just in the Gaza Strip. Let me say just this. If you need to look at the totality of the conduct, the totality of the crime against the totality of the Palestinians targeted as group as such in the totality of the land.
The goal is the ethnic cleansing of Palestinian territories. Mm-hmm. Why? Because they perceive them to be a threat, or because there's a belief in a kind of a biblical version of a greater Israel. And I know I'm kind of projecting maybe individual views on an entire country there, and I don't mean to, because you know people that have different views. But is there a prevailing?
But this is why I'm saying. This is why I was thinking. Because the reasons can be many, and there are those. There are. You're right. I mean, the Israelis are not a monolith, and there are also. I don't want to invisibilize those Israelis. Few. That it might be, but there are some Israelis who are co-resisting with the Palestinians' occupation, genocide, and apartheid. And yes, they are a minority, but I see them, and the world must see them too, together with the Palestinians. The point is that many are ideological, fanatical. The majority of the people, according to the poll, think that the Palestinians should be kicked out of the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, they should be moved to Jordan or to Egypt, which is brutal. And this is colonial language. This is why I say we shouldn't be talking of a conflict. It's not a conflict unless you would have called the reality between black South African and white South African one of a conflict. Of course, there is element of conflictuality, but it's not a war. It's an occupation. It's in the occupied Palestinian territory. It's an occupation which has been declared unlawful, and which, of course, is the Palestinians have endured crimes after crimes. And these crimes have been so normalized that eventually even us Europeans were expecting them to get along with it, you know. But the point is that there are those who see the Palestinians as a security threat and justify, see, we had the 7th of October. But in fact, the 7th of October happened in a context of continuous violence against the Palestinians, oppression, and unfortunately violence generates violence. And oppression generates resistance, and it will continue to be like that. This has been the experience of Ireland, has been the experience of my country and other countries who have tried to liberate themselves from brutal regimes. Israel maintains a military dictatorship on the Palestinians, military rule for the Palestinians, civilian law for the Israeli settlers who shouldn't be there in the first place. Let me inform the the Irish friends, the Irish people who are listening to us. Also because Ireland contributed to this, and this is something very, very important. In July last year, the International Court of Justice, the highest jurisdictional body, justice body of the United Nations, declared that the occupation is unlawful and must be dismantled. Not just, in fact, it's the Israeli presence which is unlawful, not just the military troops. All the settlements must be dismantled. And even if the military troops were withdrawn and so the settlement dismantled, by Israel maintaining control over the natural resources, the airspace or the telecommunication or the borders, it would still be in violation of international law. And there are obligations for member states that are not met. And this is a critical issue that is it's food for reflection and action in Ireland as well.
Well, kind of in a case of, I'm not sure is the word kind of fortuitous timing, but we've just got confirmation while we were speaking that the Israeli army have launched a targeted ground offensive in Gaza after those airstrikes over the last couple of days. So there's certainly a sense of everything ramping up in that part of the world. Francesca, listen, thank you so much for coming in to speak to us. We really, really appreciate the time. And I know you're speaking in Maynooth tonight at an event that is, well, it's officially sold out, but I mean, if people are interested, I'm sure lots will be, having listened to you, maybe get on to the Maynooth website. If you look at it, you'll find details of it. And you never know, people often hand back tickets to these things because they can't go in the end. So you might be able to snatch one up. Francesca Albanese is the UN Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territories. Francesca, thank you.
Thank you very much.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.